And now for reading and writing and radio.
She noticed a bruise and pressed it gently all around the edges, finding just where it started to hurt, and then closer into the middle until she came to the spot where it really hurt.
The author of that bruise description was Jacqueline Jackson, but it could be you. WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
Have a bruise on you? Where is it? On an arm? A leg? Around your eye? Do you have a black eye? How'd you get it? Did it hurt when you got it? Does it still hurt? How about scabs and scars? What's under that band-aid? I've got one now on my first finger. A cut from opening a dog food can in too much of a hurry. An experience common to all of us is hurt. We've all had skinned knees, bloody noses, cuts, bangs, various illnesses, perhaps even broken bones, stomach flu, which Thad in Ghost Boat describes as wanting to lose your dinner but can't. Isn't that a terrible feeling? And often we've had the hurt and pain that goes along with illness of a longer and much more serious nature. Every scar of mine has a story. My best stories are, well, my left thumb. It had this accident, and I never had to tell my lefts from my rights because I could look at my thumbs and know that it was my left thumb that, first of all, got smashed in a window seat, and the pain from that was excruciating. My mother tells me that I actually fainted, but I can remember sitting on the kitchen counter, I must have been 3 or 4, and having her bathe it in a basin with cold water. And a couple of years after it was smashed, I then nearly cut it off with a hatchet. I was playing out by the woodpile. We lived on a farm. And I was trying to cut a little metal strip with a hatchet. And it slipped off the metal strip, and it hit my thumb and nearly severed the end of it. It grew back very well. But ever since, when someone says to me, "Turn left," I whip my thumbs up in front of my face. It's disconcerting when you have mittens on. Another good scar is the one right on the inside of my nose. Nobody notices it, but I know it's there. And that was because once when I was 8 or 9 and was standing innocently on a dock, a little boy who was fishing threw back his fishing line and it whipped around and the fish hook caught me right in the nose, just where a fish ought to be caught. And I walked home crying, holding the boy's fishing pole. And again, my mother tells me, because I was not aware of the picture that I made, how pathetic I looked with the fish hook in my nose and the worm that was on the fish hook hanging down from it. I recall then being taken in to the doctor in the nearby town, and he gave me a shot which he described as planting a potato. And even with all his description of what fun it would be to plant the potato, that tetanus shot didn't feel very good. Pain is a funny thing. It's in the mind. Often you don't feel it. It goes unnoticed. It gets confused with other things. You've probably been in an exciting situation, a game, where you are injured and don't even notice it until you see the blood or have time to stop and realize that something is throbbing or stabbing. But the excitement of the game has taken precedent over the pain that you've felt. Pain can be confused with other things. There's a particularly unfeeling book that I read when I was about your age. We had it home from the library. It was an adult book called Genius in the Family. And I forget who the genius was, but he was a man with an almost sadistic sense of humor. I think he discovered the principle of the repeating rifle or something like that, among other things. He was an inventor, and his son wrote the book. Anyway, this fellow was very ego-centered and seemed to have no heart. And even at the age that I was reading the story, I was appalled at this father and that the book was being written as funny. Well, let me tell you one of his tricks, which illustrates the confusion of pain. They were a well-to-do family in the early 1900s and had a maid working for them, a pleasant, chubby Irish girl. And the father one day was out in the old-fashioned kitchen, it would be to us, but perfectly normal for those times. And he was explaining an experiment to his son and was heating up red-hot pokers in the stove, taking off the stove lid, taking out the pokers, which would be red at the end, while the Irish girl was working around at the sink and in the scullery. He also, hidden from the servant girl, had a poker in a bucket of ice. And at one point, he took the poker out of the bucket of ice just after he had been brandishing the red-hot poker and touched it to the back of this girl's neck. The girl thought that it was the red-hot poker. She screamed with agony. She wasn't hurt. It was only an icy poker that had touched the back of her neck. But she was not convinced. She had been burned with a red-hot poker, and nothing the father said, who I presume was somewhat contrite after he had pulled this horrible joke, nothing that he said could convince her that he had not deliberately burned her, and she packed up her bags and left that very afternoon, which served him right, I felt. Have you ever tried experimenting with pain? I think everybody has. How much of a bite can you stand, for instance, when somebody bites you and says, I won't quit until you say such and such, and you hang on and hang on and hang on until the bite becomes unbearable, at which point you say whatever it was you were supposed to. I think we've all done something like that. We've all experimented pinching ourselves, pricking ourselves with a pin, to see what pain is like, to see how much we can bear. I discovered early that the pain of a dentist drilling my teeth I preferred to the pain of having Novocaine, or the problem of the way it felt when it was thawing out. And I discovered that dentist pain only got so bad, and that I could bear that pain. There's a book called The Butterfly Revolution, where the chief character experiments with pain, with pinching, with pricking himself, and he makes the comment, it seemed to me that pain always is the same as heat. He actually burned himself a little with a match to see if he was right. It hurt, but then he discovered that if he could concentrate on the match and on the skin, he would be unaware of the pain. Later on, he gets a whipping. I began to concentrate as hard as I could upon that belt and upon my legs, and I thought into each whack he gave me, and the only thing I felt was heat. And he is so delighted that he has overcome pain, that his mind is over that pain that he begins to laugh. And, of course, that makes the person beating him angry, who beats him even harder. I think this mind over pain is something that allows the Indian mystery men, holy men, to lie on their beds of nails. And our children are still marveling over the story in the National Geographic, where up close to the top of Mount Everest, where all our scientists were there in their specially constructed suits and tents and so forth, they discovered a Tibetan walking along barefoot, obviously oblivious to the intense cold and seemingly not hurt by it. Short pain of short duration is pretty easy to stand. A shot, it's over in a second, and then you recover from it. Pain over a long period of time has other sorts of effects. Have you ever had pain that has lasted not a minute, not an hour, but a day or a week or a month? How does constant pain affect you going on and on? How about the hurt that other people have? I talked to a father recently whose daughter is crippled with arthritis, and he said to me, the worst part is not to be able to help her with her pain. Have you ever wanted to help another person bear his pain, to bear that pain yourself? Sometimes I think we've felt the reverse. We have wanted to inflict pain on someone that we felt angry about. There are many authors that have written vividly about pain. In the book by Potok called The Chosen, Reuven gets hit with a baseball in the eye. I saw the ball coming at me, and there was nothing I could do. It hit the finger section of my glove, deflected off, smashed into the upper rim of the left lens of my glasses, glanced off my forehead, and knocked me down. Everyone on the field came racing over to me. My glasses lay shattered, and I felt a sharp pain in my left eye when I blinked. My wrist throbbed, and I could feel the bump coming up on my forehead. He sits while the rest of the game goes on, and towards the end of the game, he says, the pain in my left eye was so intense I could feel it in the base of my spine. At that point, they discover how badly he's hurt and rush him to the hospital. They walked me to the emergency ward. I was frightened and began to feel dizzy and nauseated. The pain in my left eye was fierce. I could feel it all along the left side of my body and in my groin. The doctor who examines him says, you stopped a ball with your eye, I hear, he said, smiling at me. Let's have a look at it. I took off the wet handkerchief, opened my left eye, and gasped with pain. And later, two hospital orderlies came into the room, wheeling a stretcher table. When they lifted me off the examination table, the pain rammed through my head and sent flashes of black, red, and white colors into my eyes. I cried out. Another book that describes various sorts of pains is one called The Journey Outside by Mary Q. Steele. It's a fantasy. The boy, Diller, has spent his entire life living in a river in a cave going round and round under the earth. And at one point he gets free of the raft on which he lives, climbs up through a rocky chimney sort of place in the cave, and comes out into the darkness of the outside world at night. The next morning he wakes up. He is amazed that there is such a world outside, explores it some, and then lies down and goes to sleep in the daytime. When he woke, he concluded that he had been poisoned and was dying. He was on fire all over. His eyes were so swollen he could barely squint through the lids. In his mouth, his tongue was thick and swollen with thirst and venom. He touched his face, finding it, too, puffy and feverish, and whenever his fingers brushed his flesh, flames seemed to follow them and sear the skin. He staggered to his feet and began to stumble around, half out of his mind with fear and pain. Who would help him in this alien place, this country of fantasy? Not the white woolly things he had seen earlier, he was certain. They were too stupid to help. But when he glimpsed three or four of them through his watering eyes, he could not stop himself. He went toward them, half falling, reeling, making eerie, gargling noises between his cracked lips. Some boys find him and throw stones at him. He stood still, weeping, holding his arms over his head to protect himself, begging for help while the shower of rocks stopped and there was a sound of running and then silence, and he knew he was alone again. Moaning and sobbing, without knowing what he was doing, thinking once when he heard the sounds that there must be someone else close by, tortured and suffering as he was, he sank to the ground. Someone touched him gently on the shoulder, and the fire of that touch jerked him back to awareness. Now there's a description of sunburn. There's one other kind of pain that I haven't talked about. We have outside hurts, but we also have inside hurts. Outside and inside hurts sometimes go together, but not always. By inside hurts, I don't mean belly aches, marrow aches, as I used to call that extreme tired feeling that is so deep inside you, you don't know where it comes from, and it must be in the absolute middle of your bones. By inside aches, I mean the kind that come from having your feelings hurt, that lump in your throat that is so big that you can't get around it. The aches in your heart when you have hurt someone, the way you feel when something terribly unhappy has happened to you or to someone else. These are the inside hurts. These are a kind of suffering. Last year, one of you wrote in various sorts of suffering. To suffer is to lose your father and mother. To suffer is to hurt when you get a shot. She's mixing up, you see, the inside and outside hurts. To suffer is when you have braces. To suffer is when you have to have two teeth pulled. To suffer is to be alive. She's talking there about the human condition. We have happiness, and yet we also have suffering. To suffer is to get hurt. To suffer is when one of your pets die. We all have stories about our scabs, our scars, our bruises. Why don't you list your outside hurts and decide which one or ones you would like to tell the story of? Why don't you list your inside hurts, the ones that really hurt when you think about them, or that hurt so badly that you prevent yourself from thinking about them? Sometimes taking an inside hurt like that and writing it out will help it from hurting so badly. So today let's take our bruises, the inner ones and the outer ones, and let's press them gently and see.
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.